Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
Hello, and thank you for joining me today on At the Organ. My name is Brent Johnson. Jim Logue is away this week. The Raven label has recently released its third volume in a series of albums of the music of American composer Seth Bingham, all three recorded by Dr. Christopher Marks on the Schoenstein organ of First Plymouth Congregational Church in Lincoln, Nebraska. We'll be talking with Dr. Marks and hearing about the creation of this series. Despite Seth Bingham's large output of compositions, his music is not well known today. And this latest CD, along with the two preceding it, helped to remind us and let us enjoy some of these forgotten works. Seth Bingham was born in 1882 in New Jersey. He studied with Horatio Parker at Yale, and then went on to Paris to study with organists like Guillemot and Vidor. Back in America, he taught at Yale University and later Columbia University. He served as organist and choir master at Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City for 38 years. Seth Bingham died at the age of 90 in 1972. To find out more about Seth Bingham and the production of this latest CD in the series, I talked with Dr. Christopher Marks, Associate Dean of the Hickson Lead College of Fine and Performing Arts at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. I started by asking him how he came to know about the music of Seth Bingham.
So I heard a recording of Roulade a number of years ago, probably 10, 12 years ago, and I had never heard the piece before, and I really liked it. And I've always been kind of looking for sort of new things to play and perform that maybe hadn't been heard quite as much. And even though it's certainly his most popular piece, it was not one that I had heard at a lot of recitals. It was certainly not the kind of repertoire that we learned as students. I looked up Seth Bingham because I liked to find out more about composers that I hadn't heard of before, and discovered that he had written a lot of music. So I was really intrigued by the fact that he had written this huge amount of music and this one piece that I had not heard or played before, and was interested to see what his other music looked like. I was teaching at Syracuse University. It was probably about 2006 when I got this kind of rolling, maybe a little earlier than that. And I went to Rochester to hear a friend's organ recital at Eastman, and went into Sibley Library while I was there and just picked up everything on the shelf that Bingham had written, and made some copies and took it back with me to Syracuse and started reading through it, and realized that there was a real consistent high level of quality to a lot of this music. And I got interested in the fact that nobody had been playing it. You know, we didn't learn it as students. We didn't hear it much as recital repertoire. There were no recordings of this music except for, you know, a couple of pieces kind of scattered here and there on recordings of a lot of other music. But there was nothing that was just all the music of Bingham. It was, I think, my last year teaching at Syracuse, and I got a job to come teach here at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And while I was still sort of finishing up there at Syracuse, this was all kind of coming together as a possible idea. When you teach at a university, they expect you to be doing interesting new things that no one else has done before, to try to find a sort of research niche. So it struck me that this music, that had much of which had never been recorded, and certainly there had never been a recording devoted just to the music of Bingham, was something that I could do that nobody else had done before, and that also was something that I would really enjoy, because the music was very attractive to me, very interesting, and I thought it might be really interesting to other people too. So it all kind of came together at just the right moment as I was moving to Lincoln. And of course, the real bonus of that was the fact that here in Lincoln, we have this amazing Schoenstein, which turned out to be the perfect vehicle for this music.
So being there in Lincoln and having that organ was quite a stroke of luck, wasn't it?
Well, it was a stroke of luck to have that organ right here in town, and also to have this music that I really wanted to perform and record that works perfectly on it. So the stars aligned in great ways for all of this. The instrument obviously is orchestrally inspired and has such a wealth of wonderful solo sounds, which were called for in a lot of Bingham's early music. It also does French Romantic music very well, I think. The kind of rich layering of 8-foot sounds that you can get from it, and the way that you can get a really convincing crescendo, decrescendo effect. And since Bingham's music was inspired by French Romantic organ music, plus that layer of orchestral sounds and kind of color that you might get from an orchestral organ, this organ worked perfectly for it. A lot of the things that Bingham called for in his music that were either maybe on the Woolsey Hall organ or on the Cassavant that he had there in New York were things that you could also get on this Schoenstein, like a big fat solo gamba, which he liked to call for as a solo stop, even with the celeste. So he would call for the solo gamba celeste with as a solo voice. And it works beautifully on this Schoenstein. Big solo flute, too, on the solo division there. The Bohm flute in the Schoenstein works as a wonderful solo sound. Bingham called also for things like French horns and English horns, and all these things are there on that organ. And so it was great to be able to realize these colors that he had in mind.
How aware are we today of Seth Bingham's performance style and the registration that he used that you were able to bring to life on this organ?
Well, you know, I don't know a lot about him as a performer per se. There are some anecdotes in articles and so on about his performing ability. I think Cyril Wright, who's another composer that people may be familiar with, was a student of Bingham and talked about hearing him play and how wonderful it was. But Bingham himself, I think, was pretty humble about his performances and was never ambitious to be a kind of, you know, active world-class concert organist. But when you ask about registration, his scores that he wrote for the organ are quite detailed in registration indications. And especially in the early part of his career, he clearly had an orchestral organ in mind. He had an organ built at Madison Avenue Prez by Cassavant in about 1923, I think it was. And this organ, you know, that at that age of Cassavant's organ building, they were building some big kind of orchestral style instruments. This was definitely one of them. And it's clear that the music that he wrote around that time in the 20s and on up into the 40s had that kind of orchestral organ in mind. He also was a student at Yale University, and then also taught some at Yale University. And so the Woolsey Hall organ was clearly an inspiration for his registration ideas and the way that he wrote music to be played on the organ. He wrote there's an unpublished memoir that he wrote, and he talks about actually hearing the dedication recital of the Woolsey Hall organ in its first incarnation, which is kind of fascinating. But that orchestral style of organ was definitely what he was looking for with a lot of his music, and he continued to be very specific about registration indications, often kind of writing them in the French manner with his French influence, that he was writing with the idea of, you know, the kind of French romantic organ as well. In his later music, he's still very specific about registrations, but I think it's fairly clear that he was thinking more of an American classic instrument. There's a bit more of kind of neo-Baroque approach to some of the registrations than in the earlier music, less kind of calling for orchestral solo voices and more for, you know, things like a 4 foot and a 2 2/3 by itself. So there's some change there, but it's clear that throughout he was really interested in color and in using the organ in colorful kind of orchestral ways.
Can you narrow it down to two examples, an early work that's very orchestral compared to a later work that's more classical in style?
Well, early pieces that might be orchestral, you know, that Memories of France suite went through a few incarnations. I think it started as an orchestral piece. He was trying to write orchestra music early on in his career. So it started as a four-movement orchestral piece. It also exists in piano four-hands versions in manuscript, and there's evidence that he played that. And then he also made, of three of the movements, he made organ arrangements. So this is music that started as orchestra music and ended up on the organ. So that kind of orchestral approach is really clearly embedded in that. A later piece as a kind of contrast, I think, would probably be the Ut quaeant loxis, this fantasy that he wrote towards the end of his writing career based on the Latin hymn. And the indications in there are, I think, very clearly at home on something like an alien Skinner. And in fact, as you know, just a few weeks ago when I was in St. Louis playing for the convention there on the big Aeolian Skinner at Christ Church Cathedral, that piece fits that organ like a glove. It works perfectly. The indications that he wrote into the score for that music, you can almost do without any change on that organ, which is pretty unusual, of course. Most of the time we have to adjust to the instrument. But that one worked almost perfectly.
You are listening to At the Organ.
How did the Raven label become involved in this project with you?
I had done a recording for Raven at Syracuse University. I did a recording on the historic Holt Camp in at Syracuse, and Raven put that out. So I had developed a working relationship with Bill Van Pelt as I was looking for someone to do a recording there at Syracuse. And I liked working with Bill, and Raven obviously has a nice presence in the organ recording market. So when I sort of started developing this idea of doing Bingham, I talked to Bill and said, would you be interested in this? And he said, yes, absolutely. So we've continued to work on those recordings.
Each of the three CDs comes with a subtitle. Can you tell us about selecting those and if it had anything to do with the programming on each album?
Well, you know, I think I just wanted something a little bit more interesting than having volume one, volume two, volume three. The subtitles are drawn from titles of the pieces that appear on the recordings. You know, other than that, I don't know that they have a specific programmatic kind of meaning, although like volume two, which I think I subtitled Memories of France, and from a suite that he wrote entitled also Memories of France, that is also kind of a reference to the fact that Bingham himself was very influenced by French organ music and French organists. He did some of his training in France. He studied briefly with Vidor, and it was a very influential time for him, even though he was only there a couple of years. He met his wife there in France. She was French. And when he came back, he kind of spent the rest of his life going back to France with her and being very influenced by French culture and French music. And so just putting that title there, Memories of France, not only as a reference to the piece that he had written, but also his style and his life, that he was so fond of French music.
The subtitle of this newest album is Cathedral Strains.
Right.
Where does that come from?
Well, it comes from the first movement of his suite, Opus 25, which is called Cathedral Strains. The first movement is called Cathedral Strains. And well, as I had found subtitles for each of these discs, that one seemed like a good one to add, since a lot of this music, I mean, we think of organ music as being played in cathedrals and large churches, and this music is very fitting for that. So it just seemed like a nice kind of descriptive title for the whole set.
Well, and is there more Seth Bingham music to record? Is there another album in the works?
There is still more. I have not done the complete organ works of Seth Bingham. There are a couple of pieces that I'm not sure I want to record, and so I don't think that it will ever be a complete set. But there are still a couple of pieces left that I think may be worth doing, so we'll see if that ever comes to pass. There's not a whole lot left, but there are a couple of things that might be interesting. There's also some music for organ and other instrumental forces like brass and strings. And of course, he wrote a lot of choral music for organ and choir, and also for choir and orchestra. So it would be great to see some of those things recorded, but I don't have any immediate plans to do that.
This project was made possible by some grants that you received. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Well, I've been lucky to have a lot of support, first of all, from the university where I've been teaching here at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. They have some good support for faculty to do projects like this, so I've gotten a fair amount of grant money from them for doing that. I also, for the most recent recording, got a grant from the San Francisco AGO Special Projects Committee, for which I'm very grateful. They gave some money to help support that project. And one of the other volumes, I think it may have been the second one, I can't remember for sure, but the DC AGO Foundation also has a grant program, and they were able to help with one of those, which is great. It's nice to see these AGO chapters with the money and the vision to be supporting recording projects and educational projects for the organ and all sorts of things. There was also some support from one of Seth Bingham's granddaughters, Patricia Bingham Dale, who lives in New York City, and she's been a great advocate for her grandfather's music. And one of the great sort of side effects, if you will, of this whole project has been getting to know her and getting her real enthusiasm behind having these pieces recorded. She's been a great supporter. In 2010, I think it was, I did a recital at Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City, which is where Bingham was the organist and music director. And we did a sort of release concert there for the second volume. And all three of Bingham's granddaughters were there, which was terrific.
Did you have the opportunity to perform these works before you recorded them?
In some cases, yes. It's kind of mixed. Some of the pieces I did perform a lot and have continued to perform a lot. Others I learned and recorded, and that was it. Some of that has to do with the sort of practicality of being able to play these pieces on other organs. There was one or two pieces, particularly on the second disc, that Memories of France set. Those are kind of hard to travel to other organs. You really need an organ with the kind of tonal resources of the Schoenstein. And so I haven't played them very widely. For this past recording, I actually did just put together a program here in Lincoln on the instrument, just for people here who were interested, where I played a lot of the pieces that I recorded. Some of those pieces, that's the only time I've performed them live. So it's a real mix. Others of them I've played quite a lot. The Baroque's Suite, for instance, which was on the first CD, travels very well, adapts well at a lot of different instruments and styles of instruments, and that's been fun to play in a lot of different places. So it's been kind of a mix. I enjoy playing all of them, but some of them I just learned for the recordings.
Talk a little bit about the music then. How did you select the works for each of these albums?
In this set, I did not, from the beginning of it, have a real system or plan in place for kind of choosing the music. I didn't set about to do it in chronological order or with any sort of, logic behind it. I think for the first CD, I wasn't yet sure that this was going to be a whole series of CDs. And so I picked the pieces that sort of most interested me at that moment. And so for the first CD, I think that by and large, they ended up being fairly, you know, kind of romantic style, mostly from his mid period where he was writing in a very romantic style with that French influence. I guess for the next CD, I went back and tried to find some earlier things and also some later music to show a bit more of the breadth of his writing style. And again, just picked things that I felt I enjoyed, but that also made a compelling program on the CD. I mean, I was interested with each one in constructing a disc that would make an interesting program if you listened to it from start to finish. And with the most recent one, with the two CDs, I was lucky to have the time. I had a nice sabbatical from teaching, and that gave me the time to learn a lot more music than I might otherwise have been able to do. So I was able to put together two discs, and probably the most breadth of his style in represented on those two CDs, the very earliest pieces that he wrote and also the very latest pieces that he wrote, and quite a bit in between. And so I found pieces that I hadn't yet performed and learned. I guess, ironically, the piece that got me started on all of this, Roulade, I didn't actually record until the very last session. And I think this was partly because I was a little intimidated to do it because it was the one that everybody knew. I wanted to maybe do some other things first, but also it's part of a set of six pieces, and I wanted to be able to record things in complete sets as much as possible. And I just, at the beginning, wasn't quite ready to do that whole set. it's certainly been a rewarding process to learn and play all these music, and the pieces that I've played live in recitals have gotten great response from people. People seem to enjoy them, and it's been nice to have these pieces that were a discovery for me, but also continue to be a discovery for audiences, that people say, you know, I've never heard that music before, and it's really great. So it's gotten a lot of people interested in it, and I get, you know, emails every now and then from people saying, where can I find a copy of this piece? That's very gratifying. That's exactly what I had hoped would happen with this whole process, is that, you know, his music would be better known and people would be interested in playing it and enjoy listening to it. So it's been a very rewarding project.
Dr. Christopher Marks is Associate Dean of the Hickson Lead College of Fine and Performing Arts at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and he serves on the board of the Oregon Historical Society. The album is Organ Music of Seth Bingham, Volume 3, Cathedral Strains, and it's available now. You'll find links to purchase this album, as well as the previous two releases, on our website at theorgan.com. All three albums, as well as Dr. Mark's first, Discoveries, recorded on the Krauss Auditorium Holt Camp at Syracuse University, are available on organlive.com, where you can request any track you'd like us to play. However, I do hope you'll want to buy these albums for yourself. Buying recordings is the best way to support these kinds of projects and to encourage future recordings. I also want to point out a small fundraising project for the Oregon Media Foundation. You can find a link to our GoFundMe page with more information on the post for this show. I hope you'll take a look at that. At the end of each show, Jim Logue tells you about Stitcher. Stitcher is a free podcast app that helps you find new listening content. I am a big fan and user of Stitcher. I like that when I run out of new podcasts to listen to, it will go out and find me something new. If I like it, it will find me more of the same. If I don't, it'll remember that and steer me towards better selections. If you use the Stitcher app, please add At The Organ to your favorites and tell it you like us. By doing that, you'll help other listeners find our show. If you don't have it, why not? Go to attheorgan.com and look for the iTunes and Google Play Store links on the left side of the page. Now, here's my favorite part of this. What a great instrument. My name is Brent Johnson. Thank you for joining me today. I'll be back with you next week as we talk about this organ, the unique magnum opus of the Schoenstein Organ Company at First Plymouth United Church of Christ in Lincoln, Nebraska. I hope you'll join me again then. Same time next week on Organ Live, or anytime at attheorgan.com.
At the Organ is a production of the Oregon Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at the Organ.